Hello and welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. I'm your host, GT Maverick, and I'm coming to you on November 24th, 2021, from Kansas City, Kansas. And I'd like to start out today's show with just a short poem that I wrote some while back. And I call it, "To Know Thyself is to Know God." We know that God is inscrutable, acting out plays of the greatest beauty and horror within and between us all, the Tao, that which loves and nourishes all things, but does not lord it over them. And we know that we are inscrutable, our subconscious minds, that very few of our actions are deliberately taken, that our conscious awareness is very limited, a one-directional stream, one object at a time, 18 hours a day at most. And that our subconscious, that which so truly defines us, is of infinite depth, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We are this, pumping blood, moving muscles, digesting food, processing our deepest sensations. What knowledge does it hold? How can we defend it from the unscrupulous and the deceptive? Know thyself. Refuse to do so, and someone or something will do it for you. Who would you like to define you? Yourself or some other entity. And we know that the knower cannot ultimately be the object of its own knowledge. So as we seek to know the psychological and spiritual makeup of ourselves, we seek to know God. We find salvation in this definitively endless journey, this perpetual destiny. As within, so without. When you accept God, you accept yourself. When you reject yourself, you reject God. When you subject your God-given authority to the whims of inscrutable, vague, foreign entities, as said before, soon as you use a piece, he will use the whole pie against you. Soon as you know yourself, he will have known you sooner. We are predictable, you see, on the whole, endlessly. Sorry to break it to you, but the more you know, the less of you the man can screw. For our profiles are made up of thousands of public thoughts, pictures, and recorded data, collected day after day after day, year after year after year. Media algorithms process it all at once, know exactly which buttons to push, to weaponize systematic divide-and-conquer techniques, qualified by conclusions of abusive psychological experimentation. This is the beast system, and it aims to treat us all as cattle, as livestock, wrangled into pens made of emperor's invisible gates. This is an attack on our basic psyches, the deepest part of our souls. But guess what? I have news for this system. He, they, and it ain't ever gonna know me. For it's like I said, the machine is restricted logically, but there is no limit to human potentiality. Give yourself the authority, and you give God the authority. He will work miracles through you as you work miracles through him. For the kingdom of heaven is within you. Banish the demons from your soul, your psyche. Take responsible for your world. Know thyself, and you will. That's something I wrote last year, and it seemed to be pretty appropriate. And generally, this is the sort of thing that I was talking some while back, that the further you get deeper into the sciences, and the further you get into understanding physics, like in the case of physics, the further you get into understanding it, you realize that there are areas of which this observational science is insufficient in order to describe the phenomena that we witness. That at certain levels, our knowledge is incapable of addressing the deepest mysteries. And there's always a mystery further. And in the case of physics, there is the fact that we use light in order to look at our world, that when we try to examine light itself, we don't have anything to do that, really. In a similar manner, it goes to the fact that the knower cannot be the object of its own knowledge. And so this is the... There's a level to human understanding that we can't really step any further to, because understanding ourselves requires ourselves to understand ourselves, and the knower attempts to know itself, and ultimately you can't get to that point where us as human beings, or these flawed mortal creatures that we are capable of deeply understanding where our the locus of that divine spark that makes us up really is. But we can get close. And that is the ideal here, is the attempt. It's the perpetual destiny, that perpetual journey that we make, that curiosity, that inquiry that leads to a better understanding. They'll never get there. It'll never get to perfection. This is a mathematical phenomena, like an asymptote, where the function always gets closer and closer and closer to one, but never actually gets there. And that's this is a phenomenon of our lives, and both on an individual level, spiritual level, and as well as a societal level, that so far as I can see, I don't necessarily see any finish to this. Perhaps, maybe at the rapture, maybe upon the day of judgment of sorts. But short of that, we will always be striving to know ourselves. We'll always be striving to have that perfect world. We'll always be striving to have the love, that absolute love that we truly do want. But in this plane of existence, I don't believe we will actually get there to that 100%. But the attempt to do so is vital. And so that's where we are. That's where we are today. That's where I am. And I'm going to continue to do that. Even if one claims it's some sort of futile effort, nonetheless, it is that effort itself that shows that it is not futile. It is the effort that is worthwhile, because it justifies itself. It reminds me of, in a little way, there are so many ways that you can see that this is the case, that this concept is applicable, and so many ways in which it's been described as well in popular culture. I remember in the Doctor Strange movie that came out some years back, at the end of the movie, he's trying to, and I'm going to lay out some spoilers here for you folks. At the end of the movie, he's fighting with the big interdimensional demon that's trying to take over the world. And he gets into such a situation where he repeats a fight that he has with this demon. And this devil creature, whatever it is. And he repeats this fight with him. He's never going to win the fight, but he's going to lose every time because the demon's super, super powerful and it will destroy him. But he has the power to repeat that over and over and over again. And against this particular creature that looks for, it wants, in a way, you could look at what we might be facing on the worst possibilities that come with this digital matrix totalitarian imposition biosecurity state that's being brought upon us, is to wipe out history entirely and wipe out time and just turn us into whatever it is that the authoritative, whether they're people or whether they're an AI or some sort of structure that that takes over our civilization and our lives, turn us into robots that just do whatever we're told, such that we lose that even the very ability to think and to express ourselves in some sort of individual manner or to create great works. Similar to an extension of that 1984 world. Anyway, that is some of the worst nightmares that that could come about if we allow what is this pressing evil that has come upon the world to continue. Fortunately, though, my friends, again, be not afraid, but be courageous. Because every time you stand up, you stop that a little bit more, and we push it back, and we address the bad actors involved in this. And it is happening. I encourage y'all, all we got to do is just keep up the pressure. Stick to our principles and integrity, and we're going to make it through. Anyway, so back to the example. So this particular demon, as it sort of embodies that sense of there being no more history, and it apparently lives in a dimension or a parallel universe where there's no time, for that demon to endlessly fight against Doctor Strange in this case, who is in this loop where he fights with the demon and he loses every time, nonetheless, the demon's going to give up eventually, because this is not what it wants. It wants total control. It wants total control. It wants the end of time, and it doesn't want any creatures about who are willing to fight against it. That is what really angers it more than anything. And eventually, it will turn tail and run back to the abyss from which it came, and justifiably sit itself in a hole and stay there until, of course, some unfortunate people end up trying to bring it back. This is something that seems to me is quite descriptive in how it is that we move forward with this perpetual journey. Now, the thing is, too, in our world, we're not necessarily fighting an impossible to defeat demon. Some of us might very well be, and that might very well result in just hitting your head against the wall. Eventually, that wall is going to break, and it will. But at the same time, we're in this world where we can have the good things that we want, and we can win, and it happens. And that's one of the things that's so beautiful about it. And so long as we retain the good things in our life, as long as we retain those freedoms and those liberties, as long as we keep loving each other and not being afraid, as long as we have courage, we will have that. And we'll have those good times as well as the freedom to find them and make them happen. So to know thyself is to know God. And I would encourage you all out there to meditate on this. And it reminds me, too, of this. This might get to those out there who are interested in stepping up their sort of psychonautic level. Part of attempting to know oneself is to analyze just about everything that you can. So there's our physical bodies, clearly, we can look at that. There's our relationships, we could look at that. There's the environment that we're in, we can look at that and analyze it. What does this mean? What are the positions of it? Do I like it? Do I not? Can it be improved? Etc. There's our spiritual life and the love that we have, where that's attuned and where we direct it. There's also the mental and psychological portent to all this, too. And this is something that I might have mentioned in a few shows back in the Psychonautic Adventures portion of it. Story about that. But what I did so long ago that was something, amongst many things, something particularly relating to my mental state and trying to understand what's really going on in this world and who am I and all that sort of thing, was to think about thinking. So what happens with this, and this is that in that attempt to know oneself, you won't necessarily get there. Not completely, but you will get closer and closer and closer, and you will better understand yourself. But to think about thinking about thinking. So at least for me, I've had this, and I don't know if this is necessarily the case for everyone, but there's a narrative, a running stream of consciousness. It sort of runs through my head. I've been there for as long as I remember. Lots of times you don't notice it when you get into something like the flow, and that's one of the beautiful things about life and about getting into a position where you really are like in the zone. You know, this is something that athletes get into, and when I get into a good game of basketball or something like, okay, good game of chess, or any number of things, I don't necessarily think directly about what's going on, what's happening. Something ends up taking that stream of consciousness, and it melts away for the time being, because all of your parts to your body are functioning in full order. It's kind of like if you have a car and you start it up and there's the idle and it's just sitting there, there's a certain sound while it's idling that you might not hear when it's actually running that might be kind of notable. But when you're actually driving the thing and you're in the midst of traffic and speeding up, slowing down, brakes here, trying to cross lanes, making sure you don't hit anybody, that sort of thing, and staying in your position, keeping to the speed limit, all that sort of deal, you don't notice that hum of that you would if you were just sitting in your car and it was idling. And in a similar manner, you don't notice that stream of consciousness, that perhaps narrative, if that it can be described that way in one's own mind. But that's a good feeling, especially when you're doing something that you really enjoy and that is positive, is that you don't notice that. And at that, it doesn't mean that there being an awareness of the conscious stream of consciousness that goes into one's mind is necessarily wrong either. It might just be that it's the sort of thing that goes on when there isn't something else happening. When you're not in a position where you're heavily invested in your work, you're in the middle of painting or dancing or in that case playing a sport like basketball, where the body and the mind, and perhaps certainly the soul has something to say about this as well, will, when there's not other stimuli, will create stimuli on its own to sort of fill the space. So you could say it kind of like a nature abhors a vacuum. And in a similar manner, if there's not much going on, you'll come up with something, which is another great thing about life generally. You know, if you just ended up in a room on your own, are you just going to sit there and do nothing? Yeah, you'd find something to do, at the very least. But that might be a bit of a portion of where this sort of thing comes from. But nonetheless, the content and what it does and how it works within your mind and how this relates to your thoughts and actions, if you're curious about figuring out where that really comes from. And this is one of the big things that I think is a portion of the Great Awakening, this waking up process that so many of us are trying to bring on and to encourage in others as well. That there is, I've noticed this amongst friends for a very long time, and people I've known, that I've met some very good people who I could tell were very good people. They have like a golden soul, like it's beaming from them in a way. There's a certain type of wavelength that they radiate. You know, the classic pickup line, you know, I love your aura, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, these are for, if you're on that sort of level where you can notice that, I mean, it's very real. But some of these people, even when they have this golden soul that beams out, that you can pick up on in a sixth sense sort of manner, there are some of them that nonetheless don't see it. They don't necessarily feel that. And in some cases, they might actually be mean people. Actually be like, in some cases, they have been. I've noticed this before. And that happens. And that happens. And I've wondered about this. Like, why is it that there's this person that is clearly at the deepest level, like a brilliant and awesome, radiating, loving person, who's nonetheless on the surface and in conversation or in their actions, etc., just a total jerk? Like, how does this happen? And what I'd seen is so much of the time, this goes back to the indoctrination, conditioning, the abuses that the people have suffered over the course of their lives, that have colored the way they interact with others, that ultimately is a defense mechanism that they put up in order to make sure that the sort of abuses that they took in the past don't happen again. And it can be, some people are prickly like that, and they're ready to. They have not only walls, but they got archers set up on there, and they're ready to fire. And this is understandable, and I get it. But sometimes they don't even realize that that's necessarily there. And other times, some people can be nonetheless very at heart good people, but just be confused by, again, the indoctrination, the conditioning, lies that permeate throughout much of our society, and the abuses that they've taken in the past. But when people get confused about these sorts of things, when they end up acting out against their own self-interest, when they're clearly operating in a manner that were they more, so to speak, pure and not didn't have their head filled up with mental garbage, they would be much more outwardly loving and empathetic. But nonetheless, there's something in there that there's a understanding amongst themselves that has not been reached. And this goes back to that knowing oneself, knowing thyself, and the benefit behind thinking about thinking, such that, let's say, for instance, that someone is upset at a stranger. The stranger came up and said, "Hey, how are you doing?" And the person just turned away and walked away. Why? Why does this person necessarily just turn away and walk away? Why is this? why did you turn away from that person? And that is a simple start for a question. And you can see this notably in the cities. And I'd like to ask people, like, hey, why is it that that person came up to you and said hi, and you just turned around and didn't even respond? Now, the rationale is going to be different for everybody. But if they don't ask themselves that question, they might very well get to the point where they're dismissing everyone. People in their own lives, not just strangers, but also their friends and family. And this is the sort of thing where thinking about thinking really cracks through that. It allows you to understand where your true motivations end up coming from. So if you ask yourself, okay, well, why did I walk away from that person who said hi? You might come up with an answer like, oh, well, I didn't know them, I was busy. Well, clearly you didn't know them. But let's say I was busy, I was going on, I had this thing to do, I was meeting a friend, I was at work, or that sort of thing. And then you could come to the conclusion of, okay, well, that just happened then, and that's it. Do you want to be a more empathetic person? Do you want to have a world where people respond to each other in such a situation? And these are going to be, this is the sort of thing that's, it's a very simple, I mean, just ridiculously simple example. I should like to come up with a more specific one that can kind of be understood a little bit better. Let's say, for instance, there's going to be shopping happening this weekend. And over the last number of years, the ridiculous consumerist mindset of much of the population has led to things like people attacking each other to get that new phone or TV or something like that that's put on sale. And I'd like to encourage those, if one is thinking about doing such a thing, or if that sort of thing happens, that to think about the thoughts that go on prior and that lead to the motivations is pretty vital. This is how that self-introspection really works. And why it's so important, not just to understand one's own motivations and where they come from, what it is that really drives you, but to also that much better understand others. That, okay, well, that person is angry and upset unnecessarily at someone who didn't do anything to them, like, you know, not tipping a waiter or waitress, or being upset at them because the food came out and it wasn't fully cooked. They didn't cook the food, they just brought it out. You know, ultimately it's someone else who did that. That sort of thing. Redirecting emotions toward people who didn't necessarily have anything to do with what caused it. This is something that I notice all over the place. It permeates much of society. And another example amongst many. And pick however many examples you want. Really, you can find them all over the place. On the internet, too. I'm sure there's lists of these sorts of things. Really, all you have to do is just go through, like, Andy Rooney's this thing upsets me, or this is what I'm upset about. Oh, okay, what's the deal with the seat belts and everyone having to, you know, wear one in the car or something like that? Who's going to enforce that sort of thing? Oh, wearing a helmet when you're in a motorcycle. This is strange. Actually, those are bad examples. But when people do X, it's curious and it upsets me, that sort of thing. That's really, find a list of those. And if you start to address the motivations behind why someone would do that, let's say, for instance, if you were in a situation where you would do that, you get upset at somebody who wasn't actually responsible for the negative emotions that you're feeling, then you need to question that. And it's when you do that, you're not only addressing your own motivations, where they really come from, you're also addressing any potential, let's say, misinformation that led you to a particular action or conclusion, or to think this, that, or the other. And when you do that in a similar manner too, ultimately one of the major metrics for how one grows as a person, personal growth, is that of correcting past, what's the word for this, deceptions, or past inaccurate beliefs about reality. Say, for instance, again, I bring up Santa Claus. You know, sorry to those kids who are listening. having that and believing that is, you know, can be kind of fun when you're young. You pull the wool over your kids' eyes, but eventually, as a kid, you have to realize that he's not real. And when you do that, you grow as a person. That growth as a person is tied to an accurate understanding of reality. So the more you make your understanding of reality accurate, the more you grow. And one of the ways to do that, and a very important one, is to think about thinking. That's part of the introspection process that leads us to be better people and gets us to know oneself. So I would encourage everyone out there to do that. In some ways, in my own life, the way I look at it, take what I say when I talk about myself, like the way I view myself, it's important to take that with a bit of grain of salt. In fact, I was thinking about, I've noticed this when I got on dates. Be like, okay, well, this is what I'm like, and this is what I do, and that sort of thing. And then I think about it later, and I'm like, wait a minute. Are you really sure that you are like that all the time? Are you really like that all the time, or only some of the time? You know, having an accurate understanding of reality is important, but to a certain extent, again, the fact that we can't ultimately know ourselves, you can only get closer and closer and closer, is the sort of thing that, in my case, and I think for many folks' case, this is an element of humility as well. This is part of what makes one a humble person, is that you don't know everything about yourself, and when you claim that you do, and you do completely understand yourself, you're taking a position of pride that is not only inaccurate, clearly, but also it's called a sin for a reason. It really is. And so I'd encourage folks out there to, you know, check yourself on that front. And again, I'm a flawed person on this front. I'm not perfect either. But I try to get closer and closer and closer to understanding, knowing that I won't necessarily get there. But in the act of doing that, there's a number of things that might happen. And the way that it happened for me when I was younger, and again, that Psychonautical Adventures episode of my show here, would be kind of informative, kind of jumping back onto that level, is that when addressing and looking deeply into my own thoughts, it appeared to me that after having 1, 2, 2 or 3 leading to mental breakdowns of sorts, that afterward it almost seemed like I had been reprogrammed in a way. And using that language isn't the best, but and referring to ourselves as some sort of quasi-computer or robot isn't necessarily accurate either. But Perhaps you could say reborn, that sort of thing. That it does, these things do happen. And insofar as I see, it can be positive. It can be a very positive thing when you look at it positively. Because that's what growth is. And really, our souls, they don't, unless you're really doing damage to yourself with drugs or with lying and damaging, attacking other people, that sort of thing. Our souls don't age like our bodies do, and our minds don't necessarily either. You know, things like memory will go, and we'll have different sort of deficiencies, and like in that of metrics of sorts. But the ultimate locus where it comes from doesn't go away like our bodies do. On that note, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. So, even though you got to take with a grain of salt, when someone is discussing themselves and saying, okay, this is how it is, this is who I am, this is how I act, this is what I do, that sort of thing, especially when I was thinking about the dating world, is that it can be hard to be totally accurate on that sort of thing, because you ultimately can't know yourself, i.e. But at the same time, how is it that you introduce oneself to another one when you haven't really met before? Well, hopefully, you're pretty close to the truth when you look at yourself subjectively. When the knower attempts to communicate aspects of the knower, basically you're running into a paradox here that is pretty fascinating, because I find it anytime you run into a paradox, and I would like to encourage those out there who are deep philosophers and are trying to figure out what's going on in the world and life and explain this reality in regard to their connection to it and all that. But when you run into a paradox, it's running into a guidepost. If you're going along in the fields or in the woods, and you find an absolute curiosity in the midst of that, you find, okay, you're walking along the walking through the hills, and suddenly there's a in the desert, and there's the remains of a steamboat, you know, sitting in there. Like, this is it's a curiosity that is indicative of some great depth of truth. It's sort of like when finding prime numbers in mathematics. It can be something of a guidepost of sorts, like, well, where did this one come from? Why is this? Why is that there? It doesn't seem to belong. You know, which of these things don't seem to belong in this picture? And you look at that and you're like, oh, okay, well, that's some sort of exception. Or could you say it as, okay, this is a guidepost. This is a node of particular note that really is, it's really astounding to me to see that sort of thing. And those show up every once in a while. And one of them is that of faith, certainty in uncertainty, that is so vital and so pertinent to our lives. And so, ultimately, to finish up on this portion of the discussion before we get into some other issues, to know thyself is to know God. Ultimately, we will not, as flawed human beings and mortals in this plane of existence, ultimately know ourselves. We won't ultimately know God. If you pretend that you do, that's all it is pretend. But you can get close. We can get close and we can discuss aspects of oneself and we can discuss aspects of God and we can come to closer and closer conclusions. And eventually we're going to get really close. And then we're going to get really, really close. And we're going to get closer and closer and closer. Similar to the manner of which in our world today, we swing back and forth between collectivist ideas and individualist ideas. We swing back and forth and back and forth. And each one of them attempts to push forth its sole intention of this utopic world. But in that conflict, things get slowly better and better and better and better. So long as we don't collapse and fall to our feet. And so long as we stand up and have courage in our own lives, this will continue. And we're going to be making a better and better world and get closer and closer to that kingdom of heaven. So, moving into some of the pressing issues that are going on today, the worldly issues at that, again, the battle goes on. The fight continues. The war continues for the human spirit here on this earth and against the totalitarian impulse that has claims to have grasped the groupthink and the hearts and minds of those across the free world. Australia is in trouble. This is something that we need to be concerned about clearly here in the States and send them support as much as we can to encourage the good people there to stand up against the authoritarians and oppressors on that continent, in that country. Fortunately, it sounds like the people are stepping up. This is great. Like, and again, this last weekend, there was incredible shows of global protests against all the virus tyranny nonsense. The passports and the forced vaccinations and everything else. People are standing up to this in Italy, in Germany, in the UK, here in the States, in Australia, and they're not going to let up. This is the fight that we need to win, period. This a biosecurity state that forces everyone to take experimental medications and injections into their body is not a world that anyone wants to live in. Trust me, it gets bad. It gets much worse from there, my friends. And we have to nip this in the bud while we still can. So continue to do that. I didn't realize that there were big-time protests happening. Now, they're happening every weekend. So just last weekend was just another, what it was on Saturday particularly, was another swell, like another crest in the wave. Now there's going to be another one next week, and there's going to be another one after that, and another one after that, and another one after that, until these impositions are dropped and ended. And the people who brought them on, particularly the top-level ones, when they are arrested, they need to go to prison. They need to be put on trial publicly. We cannot just kind of move past this, oh yeah, well, you know, that was yesterday, oh yeah, well, the people in charge, they'll never get put in jail. This is something that, again, another a axiom of negative aggregation, in that when I hear people, when I talk about this with folks, and they're like, oh no, no one's ever going to go to prison. No, no, no one's ever going to da 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 da. You do realize, person who's saying this, that by virtue of you saying that and perpetuating that, quite literally, you are being the problem right now. You, by saying that, are being the problem. No, they are going to prison. It is going to happen. however long it takes, it's going to happen. Now, there's plenty of... the timeline here is fluid. That's dependent. But when someone says it's never going to happen, like, that is not helpful, quite honestly. And if you really think that it's never going to happen for whatever cynical reason or whatever, you are being a part of the problem. I'm not kidding here. Really. Like, your words, the sentiment that you are perpetuating out into your world is powerful. I cannot stress this enough to folks, that really it is your psychological mindset, your where your soul is at, where your courage is at, what your hope is at, where that is powerful, absolutely powerful. And if you feel that way, if you want this, the world that you want to see is the world that you are going to get. Ultimately, that's what happens in this life. Now, if you just say one day, over brunch, hey, I want to have a new car. I want to live in a nice house. I want there to be world peace. And you just say that one day, it takes all of 30 seconds over brunch. 6 years ago, when you're talking to your aunt or something, that's not going to do it. You really have to live it. You really have to want that. You really have to desire it. And when you see occasions in which you can take action to make such things come closer to fruition, you have to take them. Those opportunities are out there. You can talk to anybody who has gone from being born into poverty, destitution of sorts, or ending up because of some terrible decisions in their life in prison or on the streets or some such things. And there are so many stories of people just turning it around. Now, how did they turn it around? Did they just say, oh, I want this, and then it happens? No, it doesn't work like that. You really have to live it. You really have to push forward and do it and make it happen. And this is the same thing here. This is the same thing here, that a cynical attitude, especially when you communicate it to others, is not going to help make that better world that you want, if you really want it. What that really shows is that you don't want that. When you say it's never going to happen, that, let's say, Fauci goes to jail, when you say that, you are perpetuating that very thing. That's how this works. That's the real intention that you're putting out there. And when you really think about that, and you see that you putting these words out there is a spell that you're putting on the world out in front of you. And if there's people around, then even more so, they perpetuate that. And they feel that, and they respond to it. And you have power here. There's incredible power in that. There really is. So if you really want things to change, you got to go with it. You have to really live that. You have to help make those sorts of things happen. And if you're cynical about it or jaded on many levels, really, I would encourage you to have courage and to have hope and to push forth with it. Because a cynical attitude is the sort of thing that stops you from actually taking actions. It's a facade for a defeatism, really, is what it is. It's a defeatist sort of acceptance of an unfortunate state of the world. that by virtue of that cynicism or that jadedness shows you to be, you're not serious about it actually getting better. And you're perfectly fine with things the way they are. Even though you might state that, oh, I don't like that, it's, I would encourage you to examine this amongst all of our own lives in however many different arenas in order to address that, and thus we can grow. Now, if you say that it's never going to happen and you actually want that, well, okay. I mean, that's a... But at that, it's at least a sincere attitude. Doesn't make you a good person to be perfectly fine with there being rampant corruption, because in a lot of cases, and this is the other thing that it gets down to as well, is that it's important for us to actually address the parts in our own lives where we benefit from the corruption being put upon the rest of us. You know, so many of us, at least in some sort of tertiary manner, have a connection to the rewards that corruption has wrought or has brought upon us. And it's important for us to check on those and to be like, hey, in order to stand up with your principles that much more so, and to improve the world around us as we see it and what we really want it to be, really need to check into those connections that we have and address them. And to stick with the principles that we do actually state. If you do want a better world, you really need to look into what you're doing, what you're really doing with yours. Anyway, so... there's a lot of issues, and so much of it, particularly Australia, I also heard about Austria and Germany, and of course you got the push again for vaccine mandates here in the States from the Biden administration, which is clearly, I mean, every one of these issues and dictates by those supposed authorities are illegal. Every one of them. They are all illegal in the judicial aspect of things. And again, we have had pushback, and it's great to see it from the judicial branch of our government here in the States saying clearly that is the case. That's exactly what we need right now. And it's great to see it. Judicial successes, awesome. Judges standing up for the Constitution and the rights of the individual are absolutely vital, and that's happening. And so that will continue. And the more so we have that, the more we can really quash this sort of thing. And then once we get it quashed here in the States, one state at a time, even if it's that way, one community at a time, one school board at a time, eventually we will get to the level where we can assist the rest of the world in dealing with their problems, with their own control freak authoritarians who are trying to put their people through this. We got to address our issue here at home before we can help others. And so the protests are going to continue. And I should have been out there on Saturday, and really I should be out every weekend. Ultimately, I am out every weekend, but I don't know where these things are happening. Nobody tells me anything. I recently just got back on Twitter. I shouldn't say get back on, because I was really just, I don't have many followers, at least ostensibly, at least what I'm told by the system itself, by this computerized social media system. But nonetheless, I'm on there, I'm reading about it, and I'm looking for, really what I'm looking for is like, okay, hey, there's going to be a rally here on this particular day, in this particular spot. Like, that happens, I'm there. I haven't heard about any of that, really, almost at all, in the last 2 years. Very few and far between. And I am nonetheless out and about and seeing around people and looking in places where there might be flyers, people putting things up like that, and I don't see anything. Perhaps around here they're waiting for me to to organize something like that. In which case, I'll get on that soon enough. But I've had other issues, and I've nonetheless been out there and talking about this as much as I think is beneficial. And when necessary, when I've had to, I've gone out and made a rally and a protest just on my own. Being kind of a lone wolf like that, that's how I roll. Organizing people, I noticed a long time ago that you can't necessarily count on them. And even when they're, it's not even that I'm trying to blame them or something for not necessarily being there, but because, I mean, we all have things that that we put priorities on, and there's family and friends and work and jobs and all sorts of things that we have to deal with, and crazy exceptions that jump up in the midst of all of our plans, and can derail them in a second. And so I don't blame anybody for not necessarily being there, but in order for my purposes, whether it's some sort of OCD manner or whatnot, it's in some cases just more better for me to lone wolf it as opposed to spending extra energy in order to get possibly a few people arrange to meet up somewhere, and then having multiple ones of them drop out and end up being there, you know, just nearly on one's own anyway. I don't know. The potential for that sort of thing is enough that, in my mind, it's more worthwhile to have the certainty that the certainty is preferred rather than the possible potential of there being something extra greater. Does that make sense? I don't know. anyway, leads to some rationale for my lone wolf activism of sorts. And also, I've had the time to go and do this sort of activism where a lot of others haven't. So that's a bit of my angle on that front. Anyway, so all the same, I'm still looking for events to go out and be a part of, and I haven't noticed any around here. Might be people waiting for me to organize it. I don't know. Maybe we'll give it a shot here in Kansas City. But so something else I'd like to encourage and mention here is there was a very important interview given on came out on the internet just a couple days ago, and this is of James Corbett and RFK Jr. And this is on James Corbett's website, and I'm going to plug this. I am going to promote it because this guy is excellent researcher, and his information is vital for those trying to understand what's been happening to us, how long these anti-human spirit efforts have been going for, and what we can do about it as well. And his website's CorbettReport.com, that's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And his most recent interview is with RFK Jr. This is Robert F. Kennedy's son. And he's been a lawyer, and he's been fighting against corporations and top level authorities his whole life, and he's a legend in his own. Absolutely, he doesn't need to just carry the Kennedy name, but he's a legend on his own. He's done amazing work, and he's put out a new book about Fauci, and it is apparently something else. It is an indictment of the highest order. And I just want to encourage anyone who is listening to this to stop listening to me for the moment, go over to his website and listen to that interview, the whole thing, all the way through. Listen to it, and then the next day after that, listen to it again, and the next day after that, listen to it again. And really let it sink in. The astounding level of corruption in the medical industry that this Fauci person has been, by this point, he's responsible for it, like a linchpin of the highest sort. And in this new book, his abuses and height of corruption is documented to the furthest detail. And I mean, that guy needs to be arrested and thrown in jail. He needs to be put on trial for crimes against humanity. This is vital. You know, this is a major, major thing that needs to happen for us to heal from this and for people to understand that they have been lied to. This mass psychosis has to end somehow. We have to bring people back to reality. Rather than them, we can't go further into this this medical fascism tyranny. It's just we can't do it. It's the end of liberty itself. It's the end of human freedom. It's the end of expression. It's the end of history. It's bad as it gets, folks. And one of the things that needs to happen is we've got to put this Fauci guy in jail. We have got to put him on trial. People need to hear these. They need to see it happen. They need to see the charges leveled at him and his cohorts in order for us to get past this. They need to understand that they have been lied to in the worst manner since this whole thing began. And they've been lied to for years. That our population here in the States and elsewhere in the world has been at the behest of this person and others that he has put in positions where they have been just absolutely abusing the population and getting rich while they're doing it. So it's not just that they're, you know, performing experiments. I mean, And they're performing experiments on people and they're coming up with some sort of, you know, better therapies or something like that. No, actually, these therapies they're coming up with, they're even worse. And he somehow still pushes them out onto the market. And doctors, institutions, researchers, to a certain extent, based on the astounding amount of money that they're throwing around and the incentives that they give, are nonetheless pushing forward with, you know, this guy's recommendations. And one of the things about this interview that is so important, I think, and I'm getting that book, and I can't imagine what other revelations are going to be in there. You can hear about some of them in the interview, but just statistically, there's some relevant stats here that the RFK gave, and these are astounding. And this really hits on, there's a couple of stats here that he mentioned, and this really hits on what people need to understand, that this is the long range over time incremental nature of what's been done to us. If things were just If we went from how things were in 1978 to how things were now, overnight, people would have lost their minds. You know, we're not doing this. What are you talking about? How does this work? No, it's an incremental approach to change and alter the society, and to get people into this Stockholm syndrome, such that they're at the behest of these corrupt organizations and corporations and so-called authorities, to where it becomes just a hierarchy of abuse, the top level on down, and accepting that abuse is part of what all of this is about. And what it's about for us is to reject that abuse and not accept it. That's the way to go against it. But the allowance of it and the encouragement, the propaganda involved, and the nudging and the psychological and social pushes upon the population that has been done for so long is to get us to be accepting of various forms of abuse, and especially in the medical industry. So anyway, back to the stats. The stats in particular that he mentioned that were just mind-blowing to me. This is the sort of thing that I've wondered for ages. I've actually looked up, tried to find out stats like this. It's not hard. It's not easy to find. I'm sorry. They don't just pop up. They'd be like, okay, I want stats on XYZ, this sort of thing when it comes to health rates. It just doesn't happen. They're not easily accessible, for me as a layperson. So when something like this comes up, and it is in a place where we can read it and access, real data and statistics like this, it's vital for us to get it and understand it and take it in. Like, this is real information that needs to color how it is that we view where we are today and what we can do next. But the stats of this that he said, in 1986, chronic diseases were present in 11.6% of the population. He gives a list of these chronic diseases. These are the sorts of things that you have it, and you have it for life. And he gives the examples of peanut allergies, celiac disease, asthma, and a bunch of other things, arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis, I think. But in 1986, chronic diseases were, that is to say, 11.6% of the population in 1986 had a chronic disease. And now, in 2021, 56% of the population has a chronic disease, my friends. We went from 12% to 56% over the course of 30 years. Let that sink in. Now, that's the fact, okay? This is the fact, all right? Now, what can we figure out from that? This is the next question. Where do we figure out? What do we figure out from that? What can one deduce from that? I mean, exactly all the things I've been telling you for ages. Exactly all the things that he's been telling you for ages. And they've been talking about environmental toxins. They're talking about vaccines. And they've been talking about, psychological issues. They're talking about, trying to figure that out. And like he said in this interview, it's Fauci's job to make sure that doesn't happen. As the director of a large governmental agency tasked with improving the health of the population of Americans, from 1986 to 2021, you go from 12% of the population having chronic disease to 56%. I mean, it's just that is the worst. I mean, this is again a crime against humanity in among itself, just for him being bad at his job. You know, that should have gotten lower and lower and lower and lower. Really, if we are operating, we are living in a society which is functioning properly, this, as a metric, should get lower each year. Y'all understand that, correct? Y'all understand this. Like chronic diseases amongst the population. If we do our job right as a society, chronic diseases should be lower each year. If we are recommending proper medication, if we have decent nutrition, if we have conditions that are clean, and we have clean water, and people have good housing, and if we are making a better society in all respects, that should be, or any respects, like especially in the medical area of things and health area of things, that should get lower. That should get lower. If things are working the way they're supposed to, that should get better and better. We should have gone from 11.6 down to 11.4 after 5 years. It should have went down to 10.5 after 10. We should have went down to 10 after 20 or something like that, or at least it stay the same, but not increase to the level of 56%. I mean, this is one of the greatest indictments of the public health policy of the United States I have ever heard. This stat alone is enough to get that guy thrown out of his position of authority with a vengeance. This stat alone, this stat. Nothing else would matter. If we're operating in a non-corrupt, I should say, by this point, it's not about corruption. It's about criminality. If we're operating with a system that wasn't expressly criminal, this would not be happening. Money has nothing to do with it. Control, power, nothing to do with it. This stat. And the fact that we've allowed this to continue, the fact that I haven't even heard of this until just 2 days ago, that's insane. Why hasn't this been brought up? Why hasn't this been talked about? Why haven't we addressed this in any of the media? Whether it's official corporate media or whether it's the local newspaper, or whether it's on your own Facebook page. Why has this not been a thing? Now, I know that there's a fair amount of censorship that would go on for this sort of deal, but this needs to be screamed loud and clear from the tops of the mountains in order to get people to understand just how much they've been lied to and how abusive the system really is. This right here. 11.6% in 1986 to 56% in 2021. That alone, if that's not enough to wake you up, I don't know what is. When is it that people are going to understand, like, that they have been lied to and treated like and abused? We're not supposed to treat each other like this. Our government is not supposed to be at the helm when something like this happens. This is a tragedy. There's 330 million people in our country. You know how many millions of people that is? Just how many that is? Just that amount. It's increased over this amount of time. And when I was younger, I wondered why it was that I'd meet people and they would seem to almost, in a way, almost beam with pride when they were telling me about how they have some sort of rare disease. It's unfortunate, but yes, so that's the stat. 12% of the population had chronic diseases in 1986, and 56% of the population today have chronic diseases. Write that down. And remember that. Remind yourself of that every morning, if necessary, in order to have some sort of antidote to the astounding propaganda that has not only ignored these figures for decades, but somehow pretended that everything's perfectly fine on the health industry side of things. So clearly, again, the medical system is corrupt. And this has been messed up by the monetary system itself. It's money. People are getting bribed for this sort of deal. Fauci would not be doing these cruel experiments, and this would not be happening to a percentage of the population. It would be clear to us. It would be clear to us, and we would take steps to address this were it not for an astounding amount of money involved that is bribing people and warping what would normally be with our eyes and ears, we would be as a population, as people, clearly aware of and would be addressing in a proper manner. And the corporate media is corrupt, clearly, through the monetary system itself, again, at the very least, through bribes, through money, the fact is that I've never heard of this before, this particular stat, and you know that there's probably 1,000 more other stats that are astoundingly indicative of this corruption that we're not hearing either. So now that we know that, that seems to be the case. And that's the world at present. Now, what's going to happen is we're going to address this. Because when you find out these sorts of things, we can take steps, each of us, in our own lives to deal with this. That's what I encourage everyone out there. To not only not comply with these mandates, but also to address the astounding level of corruption that our systems have been under. And run by, I mean, you look at the face of that weasel right up there, that Fauci fella, and you're looking at the face of the type of person that's benefiting from all this. And little by little, when we stand up in our own lives, stand up for our principles and for our integrity, and we don't throw them under the bus for a couple bucks, then we will address this. And we're going to change this as it happens. Not just in our country, but elsewhere in the world too. Because when you stand up for yourselves, principles and integrity, then we do actually make that better world. Keep your spirit high. Act on this. Spread the word. Trust and have faith in yourself and each other, and your world will change for the better. And with that, I'll say happy Thanksgiving. This has been November 24th, 2021, with your host, GT Maverick, coming to you from Kansas City, Missouri. Wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.